Hello, today is Thursday, September 6, 2018. I'm Joe Schmidt with TC2, and this is Staying Connected. Today's podcast is a continuation of our series, Staying Ahead of the Demand for Network Cost Savings. In these podcasts, we've been revealing useful strategies to help enterprises achieve continuous network cost improvement and deliver world-class network infrastructure. I'm joined today by two of my TC2 colleagues that lead TC2's contract compliance and optimization practice, Teresa Knutson, a project director, and Julie Gardner, one of TC2's senior consultants. We are going to be talking about how to effectively use the information from your TEM supplier to identify service optimization opportunities and do deep dive audits. Okay, team, let's first talk about service optimizations. Teresa, what are they and how can companies do this type of review?
Okay, thanks, Joe. Service optimizations are actually ways for you to look at your spend by looking for things that don't make sense. So you're looking for cost savings. Some examples that we often see are when you look at your inventory, you see managed services that don't have circuits associated with them. You might see SIP trunks and features with no data connections. You might see speeds that look unusual in terms of a data circuit that has a price point that doesn't make sense in relationship to your other services. And you also might see unusual things that don't fit into your environment. Even things like services billing at sites that have closed, or if you're in a wireless world, the wireless services that have no usage. So those are some of the basics. So optimization is all about finding ways to cut waste out of your environment. We typically start with reports from our clients' TEM providers, or if those are lacking in detail, you can actually pull inventory reports from the network suppliers' billing portals. So a basic inventory by site is really a good place to start. And you want to organize your data in such a way so you can slice it and dice it into different views, like by service type or speed, by address, by vendor. All these views will help you isolate anomalies and run different analysis. And so from a timing perspective, once you've identified some optimizations, they usually take between 1 and 4 months to complete. These activities typically require some activity on your part in terms of making a decision about a service, disconnecting some things, or even in some cases doing contract amendments. So like all changes in your billing environment, once you've executed on an optimization activity, make sure you audit behind it to make sure that that actually is executed and implemented properly.
Yeah, that's a great point, Teresa. In one of the recent audit and optimization reviews that I did, we had a client that was purchasing BRI services, about over $1 million a year in spend, and they realized that those were not necessary. We helped them to process, get those disconnects in place, to take those services down. What we found were about 75% of the circuits of those disconnects were actually completed correctly, but about 25% either were completely missed by the vendor or they weren't credited back properly to the date of the disconnect. So that was a significant amount of money. While they were able to eliminate the vast majority, there's still about 25% that we had to come behind to review, and we're still waiting on a few circuits to complete. That's after a year. So definitely looking behind, checking behind that vendor to make sure that the optimizations that you've implemented were correctly implemented is a key part of the review. Some other issues that we run across have to do with those MPLS upgrades. Most of our clients are in sort of a perpetual state of upgrade these days at their key sites. Most oftentimes, vendor contracts are only going to include pricing for certain speeds. It may be the speeds that you're purchasing ideally or speeds that you know, are available at the time the contract is signed. What happens within when a client upgrades to a speed that either wasn't previously contemplated or that wasn't available at the time of the contract, what will happen is that you'll default to a service guide rate less your contractual discount as opposed to your negotiated contract rate less your contractual discount. And this can result in those port charges being significantly higher than they should be. I'm seeing this actually quite frequently at clients that have large bandwidth circuits in the APAC region, and previously speeds that were unavailable have now become available. I had a client go from a 500 meg port to a 600 meg port, and the cost for that 600 meg port was more expensive than the gig port that was in the contract. So definitely something to look out for.
Yeah, and I would agree. Access is really an unusual thing, particularly when you get into the Verizon world. It's very tricky, and I think they do it by design a little bit because if you can't understand it and you don't know how to order it, you're going to pay more for it than you should. Verizon's access pricing is based on facility type, their interface, the bandwidth handoff, and even what the CLLI or silly codes are. So the facility type is not something that you typically know, and you need to rely on your carrier to tell you that. And you might find when you see a bill that the pricing that you negotiate in the contract isn't what got ordered or implemented, so you're paying more than you should. And I've also seen issues where upgrades are happening where there's bandwidth changes and interfaces and new circuits are provisioned. And it can create a significant cost overrun and requires a client to manage a whole new set of connections while remembering to take down old circuits.
Yeah, so in addition to that Ethernet access and sort of those MPLS ports we discussed, local services are another absolute goldmine in terms of optimization. And that's really because of the way local services bill. You can't determine the USOC level details from looking at a local services invoice. So you've got to do a deeper dive there.
All right, great stuff. So is there anything else that companies can do to drive out cost reductions in their network spend?
Yeah, we actually highly recommend you pair like a service optimization review with what we call a deep dive billing audit. And so deep dive audits are performed to really audit your auditor. So if you're in a situation where you've outsourced your telecom expense or management, your TEM services to another provider, you're auditing behind them to make sure they're doing their job. And, you know, most people aren't probably aware of the details of what a TEM provider does, but they really audit based on software and variance analysis only. And so their audit procedures aren't going to capture anything unless a variance is broken or something is flagged. So there's definitely some work to be done to make sure your auditor is doing a great job.
Okay, Julie, what are some examples of audit findings that you've run across in your career? And I'm kind of curious, do you have a favorite?
Yeah, that's a loaded question for sure. You know, we see so many different things. I think probably one of my favorites was at a client or auditing at a client, and they had a standalone, they had rings, and they were paying for standalone access for their MPLS circuits when those circuits were provisioned with access from the ring that the carrier itself was providing. So the carrier was billing them twice for access. You know, ultimately we flagged it, reviewed it, took a lot of back and forth, but that was a very large seven-figure issue in the end. That was a fun one to work. I also see, we often see that when you're amending a contract, carriers will often interpret the language in a new rate table, even if it's an amendment to an existing rate table, the carriers will interpret that as a delete and replace. What that means for you as the customer, that anytime you touch your rate tables, you need to go back and check, because if the carrier billing team interprets it as a delete and replace of your existing rate table, that means only the speeds in the latest rate table will be implemented in the contract, and all of the negotiated pricing that you had before is going to default to the service guide, less whatever your contractual discount is. So you lose those negotiated list rates.
The world of billing errors and the nuances are really crazy, and I have two favorites as well, and both of them relate to MPLS circuits. And the first situation I saw for one of my clients was a supplier actually invoiced for 10 MPLS circuits in country, and they also invoiced for those same 10 circuits, same location, same circuit IDs on an account in the U.S. So the supplier was double billing for the circuit. The recovery on this was also in the seven-figure range, and this was also for a client who used an external TEM provider. So when we talk about flagging and making sure that things make sense, even basic checks like, hey, the same circuit ID is billing onto two different accounts is often missed. And the second situation is actually an interesting and alarming trend I'm seeing, and it relates to circuit upgrades. So a customer has a circuit, a lower speed circuit, they're upgrading to a higher speed circuit. The supplier goes ahead and implements and puts in place the new higher place circuit, but they don't disconnect the old circuit. So what happens is the client is paying for both the old and new circuit. So in this situation for my client, we found it happened 67 times over the course of 1 year, and it was a seven-figure recovery. And the carrier's excuse was that, hey, you ordered an upgrade, but you gave us no direction as to what to do with the old circuit. So we were kind of like, yikes, an upgrade is an upgrade. It's meant to replace an old circuit. But the carriers are looking for kind of open doors for things that they can continue to bill on. So keep your eye open for circuit upgrade issues.
That's just truly amazing that that goes on. So what are some of the best practices for billing audits?
Well, in general, your deep dive audit should be done on a vendor-specific basis and timed to match the recovery rights that you have in your contract. Most of our clients are going to have, you know, either 2 years or 6 months, and those recovery rights should be in your MSA. It will be vendor-specific, and it will even be service-specific. So you'll have a different recovery right most likely in your ILEC contract as opposed to your inter-exchange contract. What that means is if you've got 2 years or 6 months or whatever the recovery interval is in your contract, you'd want to start your audit about 2 months prior to that window. So if you've got 2 years, you'd want to start about 22 months. And that's to give yourself the 2 months or so that it takes to actually perform the audit. The goal there is you don't leave any money on the table, that you complete and raise the billing issues within the window that you have for your recovery rights. And really, when you're performing an audit, you want to really look for more contractually complex issues that you may have in your deal, the things your TIM provider may miss. That could be anything from achievement tier credits, installation waivers, any kind of special construction pools, back-end credits that you might receive on an annual or semi-annual basis, and really any special terms in your contract that may not be auditable on a software-based basis that your TIM provider is going to utilize to look at your bills. And really, you want to do this in addition to those recovery rights. You also want to take a look and think about doing a bill audit anytime you've got significant activity. This could be acquisition, divestiture, new contract rates or amendments. So anytime the carrier is going to be touching your contract or your services in a material way, that should be a flag in your mind to think about doing this deep dive audit.
So, Teresa, how long does this audit process tend to take?
Well, the audit itself could, you know, take as little as just a couple months, depending on the size and the nature of your environment. But getting the vendors to actually refund their mistakes can take far longer. So historically, it used to be a rule of thumb, 3 to 6 months, you can resolve any billing issue. But oftentimes, it's taking a lot longer. Even if your issues are in the large dollar amounts, it's going to take much, much longer. It's not unusual to see things take 6, 9, or 12 months to recover, and sometimes even longer.
Julie, do you have any other helpful hints?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think just to relay what Teresa just said, auditing and getting those numbers, those issues raised with the carrier in a timely manner is so important to ensure that the dollars don't grow to the point that the process takes even longer. That is so important. And then also you need to be auditing those commitment tracking reports. And what we see across all of our clients is that vendor provided, that monthly commitment tracking reporting that you're getting can oftentimes miss substantial spend. And so it understates your contract attainment. That can also affect those achievement tier credits that you may be getting. So to the extent that those reports are understating your spend, they're understating the achievement tiers that you qualify for, which means you can get less money in the end if you're not diligent in auditing back to make sure that all of your accounts are included. I just finished an attainment credit review for a client, and we found when we looked at it on an account-by-account basis that one of the client's rings was missing, and that was a significant miss that resulted in a significant additional credit due to our client.
Okay, we are about out of time, but do the two of you have any final advice for our listeners?
Yeah, I guess I'll start. Bottom line is you really have to know your contract. Your vendor billing reps will tell you very authoritatively that you are wrong when you bring up an issue, and they will also close tickets prematurely when you raise issues, and that's primarily to meet their own internal metrics about closing tickets and the time frame to resolve issues. And so we suggest you always get a copy of the vendor's calculations of any credits that you're owed. You got to check their math. Their math is always mostly wrong. And make sure that the time frame they give you the credit is correct. And you need to check that taxes and regulatory fees are also kept credited in any of the audit recoveries that you receive.
Yeah, really, we can't underlie the importance of checking that carrier math and making sure you really understand the basis for the calculation. We just came behind a client who had a pretty significant billing situation going on. The carrier had done its own audit and had given them about $1 million in credits. We identified another $500,000, and we still have $200,000 pending. This is with a 6-month recovery window, so you can imagine how big these issues were if they were annualized out. And we had to go back and forth with the billing rep who kept telling me it was 6 months. And I put the dates down in an email 10 times back and forth where he couldn't get that it was actually only a 4-month recovery window because he was trying to add the 2 months that it took for him to fix the issue on the back end to the 4 months of credit he had provided to come up with 6 months. Your credits need to be based upon the recovery rights that you have based upon the date your claim was filed. Get the math. Make sure you understand the math and make sure you're accounting for the period of time that it takes for the billing rep to work the credit to resolution and then process the credit. Don't forget to pick that time up in any credit calculation. The billing reps that we work with will often give that bad math, and you really have to work back and forth with them to get the correct information and the correct credit amount ultimately posting to your account.
Okay, great discussion. Thank you, Julie, and thank you, Teresa. You know, clearly the nature and complexity of the issues that we discussed, I think it's probably not one that you would find that your temp providers can deal with. So it actually might be worthwhile for our listeners to contact you guys and have a chat. For our next podcast in the Staying Connected series, I'll be joined yet again by Teresa and our LB3 colleague, Steve Rosen, who will be talking with me about how to buy temp services. So please look out for messages from us providing links to our latest podcasts, or simply go to our websites. And finally, if you, the listening audience, would like to learn more about best practices for ICT procurements, or if you'd like to discuss other ICT needs with Teresa, Julie, me, or any of our LB3 and TC2 colleagues, please give us a call or shoot us an email. And you can also stay current by checking out our websites or follow us on LinkedIn.